Well, as we are whole and broken, we happen to start our chalice lighting with our meditation words. So you've already gotten your meditation words for the day. So I will give us a few more so we can sit in silence together for a moment. May you be blessed. May you be whole. May you be holy. May we be blessed. May we be whole. And may we be holy. Well, good morning again. Everybody okay this morning? Yeah? Do we have any Trekkies here today? Couple? Okay, because if not, then I don't know, you know, maybe it won't be so great. It's going to be fabulous. But I would say, yeah, I'm not here to argue the better of the series, though I am very partial to Next Generation, followed by Deep Space Nine, because it has a lot of religious and philosophical questions. But who really does not love an old episode of Kirk and Bright Green Aliens? Everybody loves that. The original Star Trek series that ran between 1966 and 1969 proved itself to be an expression of the 60s counterculture by offering us examples of characters that defied stereotypes. And that was part of creator Gene Roddenberry's master plan. He truly did take television where no one had gone before, and he regularly took on taboo subjects like racism and prejudice. A kiss between Lieutenant Uhura and Captain Kirk made history as the first interracial kiss ever on television. And it seemed that it was the specific doing of William Shatner and Nichelle Nichols, because they purposefully messed up every take that did not have the kiss in it. But in another episode, two alien men, completely black on one side and completely white on another, were the last two members of their species, because the rest had killed themselves off due to prejudice. And Captain Kirk just could not understand the difference. I mean, they were black and they were white. What exactly could be the problem? Well, they were specifically black on one side and white on the other, and exactly opposite. And that's where their prejudice came from. Although to everyone else, they looked as equals. But that reminds me of the story that we tell sometimes during Time for All Ages about God walking down the street with the blue and the red hat. You guys remember that story? I've told a couple times. She walks right down the middle of the street, and the left side of the street says her hat is blue, and the right side says, no, it's red. And then they build a wall, because they can't agree on what color God's hat is. And when she comes back to town a couple years later, she walks through town the opposite way, and lo and behold, her hat was red on the other side and blue on the other side. And they had spent all that time warring with each other over nothing. That tells us how tightly we can hold on to our side of the story. and how we can hold those prejudices, even if it is just across the road that we need to go sometimes. But back to Star Trek. So, why does Spock hear so well? He has three ears. A left ear, a right ear, and a final front ear. Oh, come on, that was bad. Come on, that was really bad. I know. Okay, bad pun. But who would really think that Vulcanism and Christianity have a lot of similarities? Though Star Trek's creator Gene Roddenberry was a humanist, there were so many social and moral constructs in his shows that it was hard to see that it didn't have some kind of religious value. The book, The Religions of Star Trek, written by Ross Kramer, William Cassidy, and Susan Schwartz, gives us plenty to wrap our brains around if you'd like to delve deeper into the spiritual and philosophical nature of the various incarnations of the Star Trek shows. But back to the Bible and Vulcanism. Third John reflects the same live long and prosper that Spock professes in his very Vulcan manner. I think this verse should make us all pause, and maybe it could even be the basis of a worthy New Year's resolution. John, who is the beloved elder and the last surviving apostle of Jesus, wrote to give guidance to a local Christian leader on some problems that his church was having, kind of like if y'all were to send an email to the southern region. Before addressing the issues of the church, in his text, John addresses the issues and extends an ancient Greek version of live long and prosper. John voices in his blessings that this leader would know true health in every area of his life. And well, that's what we all want, right? So let me read the blessing from the New American Standard Bible. It states, "Beloved, I pray that in all respects you may prosper and be in good health, just as your soul prospers." So what do we take away from that? I take away from it that maybe all beings, no matter what solar system or galaxy you hail from, we all want the same thing: prosperity in all aspects of our life and spiritual growth. And it might also say to us that John was a Vulcan, but I will address that in another worship service. Now, as I am known to do, I was listening to Neil deGrasse Tyson's Star Talk a while back while I was driving to one of our Gulf Coast congregations. And it was to my delight that Nichelle Nichols was on there, who played the original Lieutenant Uhura. And her character hailed from the United States of Africa, and she was supposedly born in the year 2233. She was telling us little delicious bits of Star Trek history, things like Uhura comes from the Swahili word that means freedom, the root of it, Uhuru. She was also supposed to have originally been Lieutenant Sulu, but Gene Roddenberry thought it was too close to Zulu and thought that might not be so great and it could be mistaken as a racial slur. So George Takei's role became Sulu and Nichelle Nichols became Uhura. And when Uhura's first name was finally divulged to us in the 9th Star Trek movie, Her movie name is Nyota. We find out that that actually is Swahili for star. He named her Star Freedom. So while some of your Star Trek factoid aficionados may already know this, it's important today and in this time to understand the importance of not just what Uhura represented to the future of our society in her own time, but what one talk that she had with Martin Luther King Jr. meant for the rest of the world. The world. Speaking about, this is her telling Neil deGrasse Tyson here. She's speaking about her aspirations to make a return to the Broadway stage with all of her skills as singer and dancer. That's what she did before she was on Star Trek. Nichols had made it clear that she originally planned to be on the show for only a short time. So at the end of the first season, in fact, she handed in her resignation to Gene Roddenberry, who tried to convince her that her part was, quote, more than just a role. And with such choice words like, don't you see what I'm trying to do here? And you cannot leave. He implored her to take the weekend to make her final decision. Well, that Saturday night of the weekend in question, Nichols was a celebrity guest at an NAACP fundraiser in Beverly Hills. And this was 1967, by the way, right after the first season of Star Trek had completed its filming. And Nichols recounts what had happened after she had been formally greeted by the crowd. She says, "Just as I'm getting seated and getting ready to turn to the other celebrities, one of the promoters walks up from behind and says, 'Ms. Nichols, I'm really sorry to bother you, but there's someone who wants to meet you, and he says he is your greatest fan.' And so I'm smiling, and I say, 'Of course,' and I get up to turn over and say, 'Where is he?' And the promoter says, 'He's right over here.' And I'm thinking he's a trucker, you know, maybe a child or someone who just wants to congratulate me. And so delighted, I turn around and I see this man from across the room with this brilliant smile that you don't see very often. And I remember thinking to myself, whoever this little trucker is, he is going to have to wait because there is my leader. And walking towards her, there he was, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., with a giant smile on his face. He puts his hand on my shoulder and says, 'Miss Nichols, I am your greatest fan.' And I thought, what an incredible moment. I am just flabbergasted. And then he begins to speak about my role on television and the power of Star Trek and how important it is. And in the meantime, for the first time in my life, I have no words to say. I'm shaking in front of this man, and he's saying how important Star Trek is to the future. Dr. King then said this to me about Gene, the man who has written this show, who has produced this show. He has seen into the future, and we are there because you are there. He said, 'You have one of the most important roles. This is a first. It's a non-stereotypical role. It's brilliance, it's beauty, it's intelligence, and you do it with warmth and grace.'" Wow. Can you imagine MLK Jr. saying that to you? And she says, "And I'm just standing there watching him and listening to him, and I'm thinking that the only visions that I have ever seen of this man really are on the nightly news of him marching with people in the South for and demanding their rights just to sit at a lunch counter. And every night he's marching, and I'm afraid. And I say, they're going to kill him. And they did, but not before he became a powerful beacon of hope. But right there, I'm just playing this character, and I'm going to give it up." So I said to him, "Dr. King, thank you so much. I'm going to miss my co-stars." But before I said, "Because," he said, "What are you talking about?" And I said, "Well, I've just told Gene that I'm leaving the show after the first season because I've received." And he said, "You cannot." Could you imagine that? You cannot. He says, you cannot leave. Do you understand? This has been heavenly ordained. This is God's gift and onus for you. My mouth just dropped. And he says, you have changed the face of television forever. Because this is not a black role, and it's not just a female role. Anyone can fill that role, he said. It can be filled by a woman of any color, or a man of any color, or a Klingon, or an alien, he said. But this is a unique role and a unique time that breathes life into what we are now marching for. Equality. You have an equal role on that bridge. And then he said, besides, you're the chief communications officer. You're fourth in command. And she says, well, I'm thinking, well, nobody told me that. And he said, you have no idea the esteem that we hold for you. And I started shivering. And she says, she's just looking at him and her mouth was quivering. And he said, Nichelle, you have no idea the power of television. This man has shown us the 23rd century. And you are chief communications officer. Fourth in command on a starship on a 5-year mission going where no man or no woman has gone before. And it means that what we're doing today is just the beginning of where we are going. You cannot leave. He then smiled again and said, besides, Star Trek is the only show that my wife, Coretta, and I allow our children to stay up and watch at night. And Nichelle, you're their hero. I can't go back and tell them this. I cannot. And you cannot. Needless to say, Nichelle Nichols went back to Gene Roddenberry on Monday and asked to stay with the show. Which is probably good, because when he handed her resignation letter back, it was ripped up into a million pieces. He wasn't going to let her go. She recounted to Jean the words that Dr. King had spoken to her. And she remembers with tears rolling down Jean Roddenberry's face, he says, God bless Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Finally, someone realizes what I'm trying to do here. Can you imagine that? Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. changed our geek history forever, just like that. He changed history in more ways than we even know. By these little pieces, these little events, these little nuggets of wisdom that he gave out to other people and how they changed our lives. Star Trek would never have been the same without Lieutenant O'Hara and the image of equality that she portrayed without even knowing it to begin with. But each of us has that exact same potential in our lives to live it in a manner that our values are visible and prominent in our everyday actions. As a small token of remembrance, if I could get my volunteers to help me here, I like to give back. So today, as the baskets come back to you, please feel free to take a little piece. This is a remembrance that Gene Roddenberry's dream of a galactic, interspecies, gender-neutral, colorblind future is possible. And today I'm making all of y'all honorary communications officers. So as the basket comes back to you, take a sticker or two if you got a little one in the back and they might like to participate. But it's a remembrance of what it could be to be part of that beloved community. That beloved community that expands beyond us in decades, in millennia, in galaxies. What we do today matters. So, can a TV series that was designed for entertainment purposes and directed primarily at North American audiences, can it serve as an adequate or approximate measure, or maybe even a mirror, of the transformations of our culture and religions over time? Studies that were published and reviewed in the book, The Religions of Star Trek, have shown that it can. More than that, though, it describes ways in which cultures cope with transformations in both constructive and destructive ways. Star Trek, knowingly or not, participated in transformation of awareness, bringing us unknown possibilities of existence, representing the big universal capital M mystery. And it brought that to the little screen, eventually the big screen. But it brought it into our homes for all of us to see how it could be. And the issues that entertain us on that screen, the origins of the universe, of our lives, and its purpose, its design, and its end, and our lives' meanings, are all part of showing us what our future could be. What we do today matters. So for many Unitarian Universalists, as with most Star Trek movies and TV shows in general, there is no God to condemn us or other alien species for being sinful. Life in this world is not a painful trap in which we must escape from. For 1 hour at a time, it is my hope that Sunday worship, as with Star Trek's universe, charges us with optimism, just as Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. did, knowing that we hold our salvation in our own hands. And together, I pray, let us dig deep with those hands and make this world a better place for our next generation. I say, blessed be, and make it so. Please join with me in singing our closing song, number 116, One More Step. Rise as you are willing and able. 168, excuse me.
Thank you.
let us make this earth a heaven, right here, right now. Let no one feel excluded. Let no one feel alone. Let us create a heaven on earth where love and truth and justice reigns. Let us welcome all at our pearly gates, at our freedom table, amid singing and great rejoicing. May we all dwell together in peace and joy and understanding. Let us make a heaven here on earth before it is too late. And let us make this earth a heaven for each other's sake. May you have a blessed and beautiful week. Go in peace. Namaste.